me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Everybody, this is John.
And I'm Kevin.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
Down, down. Hello, everyone.
Hi, John.
Hey, buddy. How are you? I'm so good.
It's nice to see your beautiful face in person.
It is. It's nice to be seen in person. It doesn't happen a lot these days.
You were in Atlanta.
I am in Atlanta.
You had a change of lifestyle.
That's right. A change of lifestyle, a change of scenery. I'm in some seasonal weather here.
You are. You're wearing a hat, a warm winter cap.
Which you wouldn't need in Houston except for maybe about 7 days of the year.
And we are back to talk a little bit more about The Amazing The Rock.
Oh, we love this movie.
We bumped it to the top of the list. It leapfrogged over a few other movies that we have sort of in development as a tribute to Mr. Connery.
Oh, we miss you, Sir Sean.
He passed away recently. It's sad, but he had a long and very full life.
That's right. That's
right. If I could have accomplished in my life the things that Connery accomplished at like by 45,
if I could
be happy.
If I could look as good on any given day as Sean Connery looked in his Zardoz costume,
then
Zardoz costume.
Get it right. Respect the ponytail.
I'm sorry.
Respect the ponytail.
I was so distracted by the thought of his loins showing.
His codpiece.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go look for Zardoz.
Just Google image search Zardoz. You won't be sorry for long.
For long.
It'll be burned into your memory.
Amazing. So here we are. We're talking about The Rock, episode 2 in our series.
Oh, what do you got over there? What are you drinking?
I'm drinking that Milam and whatever this thing was.
You already forgot. Green.
Milam and green. It's a blend of straight bourbon whiskeys.
Yes.
And it's delicious.
Two Kentuckys, I think, and one
yes.
from Texas or
it's
something?
Three different ones. It is, I think, two Kentuckys and a Texas.
I've had it, but I am not having it. But it was delicious.
It's tasty. I just had some just now.
I am sipping on Dr. Robot from Atlanta's own Monday Night Brewing. Their Blackberry Lemon Sour. And my friend, is tart and delicious.
I'm going to have to maybe, well, I don't
Fruity.
Know. Fruity. I can't wait. Fruity. Is it a peach amaretto persuasion?
Yeah. Oh, my God. We got to talk
right,
about
we'll,
this.
We'll get into it.
I'm into it.
Well, what happened, I guess, we should talk about what happened
shit.
To
Let
everything.
Let me sum it up, because you're going to have to talk a lot.
You hit
up.
It.
We got General Frank X. Hummel. he's got a scheme going. He wants to see some justice done for some Marines that were lost under his command.
A worthy cause.
They were never acknowledged and honored by the government. So he has taken control of Alcatraz. He's holding 81 hostages.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some nerve gas, VX gas, that he's going to launch at San Francisco, he says, if he is not paid money. In order to his plans are to pay the money out to the families of
right.
these dead Marines and to pay his squad for their basically like traitorous act.
Right.
But it's all for the greater good.
The greater good.
We also have Dr. Stanley Goodspeed. He's like a chemical weapons specialist working for the FBI. That is Mr. Nicolas Cage.
We love.
Yeah. He's we've seen him save the day once already. And basically, we're getting the impression that he's going to come into play, and he's going to become a fly in the ointment for General Hummel.
Monkey in the wrench.
That's almost all that's happened so far. But we talked a lot last
episode.
It
took a long time to get through all of that because I'm not sure why. Were we drunk?
There's a lot of action. There's just a lot to talk about.
There was a lot to talk about.
Killer movie,
yeah,
man.
And it's full of great people. So without any further ado, we're going to launch right in.
Yeah.
Our next chapter of The Rock begins with Stanley Goodspeed, Nicolas Cage, just getting his freak-a-deek on the rooftop of his building.
Yes.
With his
yep. Elton John's Rocket Man is playing Rocket gently Man. In the background.
I don't picture that
as like a sex song.
No, I don't either.
Lots of candles.
Yes.
How many candles?
We've talked about this before.
Who lights all these candles? Who did this?
Carla's OCD big time.
She is trying to lasso Stanley Goodspeed. She wants
into
him to
marriage.
So she popped the question. Oh shit.
That happened
last episode. Yeah. Stanley Goodspeed's girlfriend, Carla.
Marriage police pulled over.
Yeah, he impregnated her. He pumped a baby into that.
Stanley, you know
she wants to get married,
work.
And he's like kind of hesitant about it. So that's what's going on in his life.
Right. So she's straddled him in a chair. There,
oh, yeah. It's happening.
She asks, "Do you like my pigtails?" And he says, "Oh yeah, the pigtails are naughty, naughty."
He's so strange.
Emerald cream with a peach sorbet persuasion.
What?
Fucking what?
On the commentary on this, which I should say, the commentary was recorded for the Criterion Laserdisc,
which I'm ordering now,
and it's like, I fucking love that.
I love it.
The Criterion,
too.
But. I read a thing on Criterion. I don't know if it was when I was buying some stuff on their like Black Friday sale, but they said, we're not here just to tell you what are the best movies. It's like the ones that represent like the pinnacle of the genre.
Absolutely.
And The Rock definitely classifies.
I 100% agree that this is, I don't know, it might be in my top. It's definitely my top 10 favorite action movies.
Really?
Ever. Yeah.
Outside the top five, I start to get a little fuzzy on what I put in.
Just as it being sort of a Mount Rushmore of everything about action, just as far as, it's not like the great stars that you think of as action, like Schwarzenegger.
It was a touchstone of the genre. It was like it almost was like it was towards the end, and it sort of changed from, you're used to having like the leading men be the Schwarzeneggers and the Stallones, and now it's like, no, we're going to take like actors and make them action stars.
I feel sort of the same, not to the same degree, but feel the same way about like, do you remember Behind Enemy Lines with Gene Hackman and Owen Wilson?
Yeah.
And it's like Owen Wilson should not be playing
an action role
at all.
Yeah.
But it feels the same way. Yeah.
And it's like, and I think technology had reached the point that there's a lot you could do with special effects and stuff to make a dude who's not a muscle bound.
He's me or you.
guy. But you get the best actor for the part as opposed to like the dude who's got the right physicality for it, maybe.
100%. So in the middle of the sex act, the phone rings.
Coitus interruptus.
And this isn't happening. This isn't happening.
That's a very memorable delivery from
there are Cage. Very few lines that he delivers that you can't remember like the speech inflection and tone that he gives.
So Cage himself is like a super musical guy in his life, and he said that he thinks of a performance that he gives in terms of like delivering the lines in a rhythm.
I love that.
And it really shows in this movie.
It translates to people because people love rhythm and people identify with it. And,
I mean, if you look at Shakespeare, like he wrote his plays to be like the lines are
like
to be delivered in a rhythm.
Iambic pentameter. So Goodspeed says he has to answer. Carla protests much. He says he has to answer because it's work calling. How could they know you're at home? It's the FBI.
It's the FBI.
He answers and says that he'll be down in 5 minutes.
I think he said 10.
10 minutes?
I had my notes wrong.
Right, wait.
That's plenty of time to finish.
Wow. He tells Carla that he has got to go to San Francisco. She is not having it. She's like, what?
Nah.
She hasn't even
upset
agreed to marry her yet.
Right, that's
I'm
what
Catholic. I'm pregnant. I'm unmarried. She's got the trifecta.
Definitely what it seems like.
Yeah. He says, I will marry you. I love you. I'll marry you. Why don't you come on out to San Francisco? This is surely just some sort of training exercise. Come check into the hotel, order up some champagne, give the baby fetal alcohol syndrome.
I feel like can you hold someone to anything that they say like during the sex act? Like you said you'd marry me, but were inside me at the time.
Yeah, it's like you said you loved me. but you know what was happening.
I've definitely said some shit that I'm like, I'm sorry I said that.
Oh shit. Ooh. So we cut to the Pentagon briefing room.
Hold on. Can I back it up just a moment?
Yeah.
If this is a training exercise, they're not calling after hours saying be downstairs in 5 minutes or 10 minutes for a training exercise.
I don't know how training exercises work, so I can...
In a world, you would expect, like, it should be a drill that comes with no warning.
Right.
To see, because that's how it's going to happen in life.
Yeah.
But for him to leap to the conclusion that it's a training exercise, to me, was a little strange.
Yeah.
She pounced back on him at the end when he had said, like,
She was trying to finish off. She's already pregnant. Maybe
that's
she
plenty.
Just loves him.
5 minutes is, like, plenty of time to finish. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I hope it's enough for her.
Well, if they hadn't taken the time to light 100 candles,
God, Carla,
they
could have
be
been
done already.
Hours ago. They could have been already eating fettuccine Alfredo downstairs, not even caring about anything.
Not the peach sorbet.
I know. Peach sorbet persuasion. Cut to the Pentagon briefing room. SEAL team commander Anderson, played by Michael
Commander
Bean.
Anderson.
Commander Anderson is explaining that they cannot attempt a frontal assault because we'll just be lit up. He says that we're gonna have to, because it's also a full moon.
It's a full moon.
There's a lot of things working against
them.
There's
no, like, there's not like a way to make a beach landing at Alcatraz. Right. It's like a craggy rock.
Right, exactly. So he says they have to try to infiltrate the tunnels below the prison and attack from within. Mm-hmm. And if they're lucky, they can take the rockets with no shots fired.
Now, Michael Bean.
Yeah.
Fucking awesome.
We love him.
Dude. He almost always plays like a SEAL commando type of character.
Yeah.
Like, the movies I know him from is Terminator.
Right.
The Abyss. Navy SEALs.
If you just stopped.
Aliens.
Right, if you stopped there.
He was in Mandalorian playing a commando type military man. Like.
Yeah, most recently. Yeah, definitely.
He's amazing, though. That's like the persona. That's the aura he has about him. It's like a fucking, he's like buttoned down tight, you know?
When you find that thing that you're real good at, milk that for all it's worth.
I don't understand why, but in the command, like in the briefing room here, all these like actors are delivering a lot of dialogue and everything like that. And most of these guys are not in the credits, period.
It's
for the movie.
Very strange.
I don't
tell
get
me
that.
Why that is.
The dude who plays the chief of staff, the dude who plays Kramer,
right?
The dude Philip Baker Hall, who I don't know if we've seen him yet, but he's in there. Chief Justice. These are like big speaking roles.
Yeah.
The internet told me.
I love internet.
Was that sometimes like an actor isn't proud of a project? I don't think that'd be the case necessarily in this one. Sometimes an actor is used to getting bigger parts. And that they think it'll like take some luster off of their name if they're having these credits as like, yeah, I was in one scene
in
The Rock.
If you're the guy playing Hayden Sinclair.
Yeah, that is not a guy with luster.
And Sean Connery is attached to this movie as star and executive producer. You say, put my name, like slap my name on the fucking box. I want to be on the video because I want to be on the VHS box.
I was on
box.
The Rock.
Yes.
It says sometimes you get an actor who's like appearing as a favor to the producer or the director, and they're uncredited because that allows them to work for less pay because of like guild rules and stuff like that.
And they're not getting taxed.
But this dude,
much?
Sinclair, nah, he needs that money. I don't know
right.
him from anything else.
I recognize him from other stuff, but I could not name a single thing.
The guy
I'll look
Kramer,
it up for the next episode.
Who was like the general who had been the main bad dude in Lethal Weapon 3, like maybe he's like, oh, I'm trying to get big. Like, I don't want to be this small part.
But it's
The Rock. Like, it's a big-budget tentpole summer movie.
There are no small parts, is what I'm told.
Only small salaries.
That's what I'm told. Only small union rules or whatever. So General Kramer asks Bean, Commander Anderson, if they found a route through the tunnels. SEAL leader Anderson says, the bowels of this prison have been ripped apart, put back together again. It's a maze of shit, which is awesome. And the schematics we've got are useless. Then this dude chimes in that you've told me he's the only real life expert.
Yes. Harry Humphreys, I think is his name. He was a real like Navy SEAL dude. And he's a professional movie technical advisor.
He sounds like a Beverly Cleary character.
He was the dude with the rockin' mustache. Like he looked really authentic.
He did.
Old school.
So real life expert Harry Humphreys says, we need someone with firsthand knowledge of the tunnels. And then Secretary over on the phone, she looks like she's like at an auction house. taking orders over the phone. And she says the former warden's dead. All the guards we talked to are useless.
They're useless.
And this is when Chief Justice pipes up.
Chief fucking Justice.
Character name Chief Justice.
He's not the fucking Supreme Court.
Why would he be there?
Is he Department of Justice?
Maybe that's his name.
He'd be like in charge of like getting prisoner transferred or something like
that. I hope
his
name in real life is Chief Justice.
My first name is Chief, last name Justice. Deal with it.
He says, I might know a guy. He works at Cinnabon and at Annie's Pretzels. And Annie's. Anyway, we get a knowing look between he and Womack, FBI director, played by Leo from West Wing.
Fucking love him.
Womack pulls him out in the hallway for a private chat. It's heated, to say the least. And Womack says, this was for the sake of national security that got us here in the first place 33 years ago. Anyway,
fucking exposition is
this
coming.
This is exposition between some pros.
These are like world-class actors.
Yes.
So I don't even mind watching them just deliver exposition.
No, Womack says, I knew someday this would come back to bite us in the ass. They talk about a mystery man, an SAS agent who they say is a national security threat and that they've had locked away for 30-plus years.
Yeah.
Womack says he's a professional escape artist. This mysterious
I love this. If he hits the streets.
hits the streets. He's broken out of two, count them, two maximum security prisons. They can't let him hit the streets. So either we know that he's either he's super dangerous or he knows too much or both.
Well, I like what Chief Justice is like. He's our age.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to hit the streets.
I have to get up three times a night to take a piss.
I love the expression hit the streets. He should have that prostate checked on.
Oh, yeah. But Chief Justice.
The expression hit the streets is just beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very, very much a part of the times. Anyway, Womack says we can't risk it. He's too much of a risk. Anyway, we cut to, we see a long-haired Connery as John S. Mason being roused from sleep, put in shackles, walked out of prison. I like in these, like these Michael Bay shots, we see stacks of books, including authors named things like Shakespeare and Sun Tzu.
You get like the slow motion of the, like the cell key dropping next to the lock. It's, it's like, all like epic Michael Bay shit. And I love it.
It's all in slow motion. Also, this is where you pointed out, and I loved this, the weird hallway lighting.
What are those big lights on the floor aiming upwards? Like,
if anything, during any kind of a prison event for a guard, that's going to be like, I can't see anything with this light shining in my eyes.
Blinded by the light.
Wrapped up like a douche.
wait, now, I think you read like I did that Schwarzenegger was offered the role.
Yes. And which is peculiar to me.
That makes no sense.
The timing would not have worked out at
all. Alcatraz closed in 63. Schwarzenegger was born in 47. He'd be like 16 when it closed, or 15. Yeah,
wouldn't have made sense at all.
Now,
unless they were planning on heavily making him up, which
somewhere else I read there's a, like a false impression that he was going to play the Connery character, but he was actually going to be the Goodspeed character.
That would never have worked.
Like, could you buy Schwarzenegger working in a fucking lab?
No. Never in a billion years.
Although,
especially him then talking about how he has next to no weapons experience.
Well, I will say, I want to say it was maybe came from Cage that he said in the drafts of the script that were floating around when he signed on that the character was much more of like a
Ryan character.
I feel pent up in this office. I want to get out and see some action as opposed to like a dude who loves the science and everything like that. Maybe Schwarzenegger, but he doesn't. I can't think of a role, with the exception of perhaps Twins
or Junior,
that he came off as like a brainy character.
Junior.
I never have seen Junior, but own it.
Or he's the scientist that impregnates himself.
Shit. Mm. If he was really smart, he would have impregnated someone else.
Yeah, I don't know.
But Arnold said in an interview that he regretted not taking a role in this film. He said the script that he read was like only 80 pages long, and it was just steady plot holes, and it was not a good depiction of what the movie turned out to be. So he did Eraser instead.
I'm just wondering what other role could they have fit him in this movie?
He only have been Goodspeed or Mason.
He was not
the right age. They would have had to make him older.
I don't see him being Mason, and he couldn't have played Nicolas Cage plays such a good, like, affable sort of
nerd.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, we cut to an airplane hangar somewhere in D.C. Stanley arrives in the pouring down rain, greeted by Womack. Neat plane is a great line. I love all his like little
the Learjet
sides.
Or whatever it
Neat
was. The
plane.
Gulf, the Gulfstream.
Womack goes
that
over.
That should have been very nerve wracking, right? For like, yeah. Imagine you get a call and you go and meet like the CEO of your company or like the director of the FBI. You're like, oh shit, it's Director Womack.
Well,
I've never met him before,
pants,
right?
Like, oh, I guess I, yeah, just like, oh, this is cool, thanks. Like,
neat plane.
Yeah.
He was nervous.
Very. I would have been, yeah. So Womack immediately starts going over Stanley's impressive credentials, and Stanley gives us his chemistry boner backstory.
Yeah.
It's all.
He blew up the house or whatever he said.
And you were telling me that Nick Cage modeled his character after Richard Dreyfuss in Jaws.
He said he was inspired by the Dreyfuss character in Jaws, who's like an expert
Hooper,
in the
right?
field, a Hooper,
yeah.
But also a kind of a geek.
Yeah.
And now when viewing it through that lens, like this scene where he's explaining the story of his childhood fascination with science and chemistry came from,
yeah.
is exactly like Hooper explaining, like,
I love it.
The first time when I was 12 years old, my dad got me a boat and I went fishing and I hooked a shark and the shark turned an inboard into an outboard and he ate my boat and and it's like, it's
That's awesome.
Basically the exact same story, but with a shark instead
chemistry
of chemistry.
Sets. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I love that though.
That's very, very cool.
And he's like, and I've been studying sharks ever since.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you, Nick Cage, for your dedication to your craft.
Even if it's cribbing other actors' notes, but that's okay.
Well, he says something that was actually true in the notes that I read about him saying that specifically, about him borrowing that backstory,
yeah.
is that actors borrow from other actors. And I will say that is 100% true, because even borrowing like subtext, like that goes back as far like 300 years ago, composers borrowing other composers, jazz musicians 50 years ago, borrowing, you know, ideas for music from other jazz
sure.
musicians. And it's like you quote the people that you admire. You have to give them credit in some way. And
yeah.
usually you do. But it's like, I totally get that. If Nick Cage, if he'd said, like, I was really inspired by, you know, Laurence Olivier, I would, you know.
Respect.
Yeah, big time.
Or Bogart or
yeah,
whatever.
Big time. What's wrong with that? If like, you're drawing the inspiration from, not ripping off the character, but drawing the inspiration
sure.
from.
Sure.
Anyway. Womack goes over Stanley's credentials. He asks him what he knows about VX Gas. Stanley says he's familiar with the whole story.
Right. He tells the story about champagne and how
yeah,
it was
like
discovered
months?
By accident.
Yeah, exactly.
He said that Cave said that's a story that his dad, who was like a university professor, used to tell.
That's cool.
And that he like just stole his dad's story and was like. Because his dad used to always love it. Every time they'd break up in a bottle of champagne, he's like, you know, they discovered this by accident.
That's see that I love that. It's the shit you get from, you know, just from everyday
you're drawing
life.
From your life experience.
Yeah, but
for
then
sure.
but then Womack interrupts him and says, get back to the gas, and he says, it's very, very horrible stuff. It's one of those things we wish we could disinvent.
Yeah.
And then it's at that point that Stanley realizes that this is not a training exercise. No, Dr. Goodspeed, it's not a training exercise.
And
says
as I,
Leo.
Like as I alluded to before, Cage had said that the character was initially like a board agent who was longing for some action.
Yeah.
But it was Cage's own idea that he's like, you know what? What if I think it'd be more interesting if he was like a real lab rat and loved the science. And so he's a fish out of water when it comes to the action.
I think it makes it a more effective movie. If he,
you
if
got
he,
plenty of action,
if he'd
dudes.
Run in there gangbusters, like everyone else in the movie, it would not have been as compelling.
Well, if you had him plus Mason, who we don't really know much about him yet, but he's like a former commando.
Plus Michael Biehn.
Like how you don't need
a whole force of Navy SEALs.
Three alphas.
No.
Like it's much more interesting to have. Yeah. Like it's not like fucking. We're not making Tango and Cash here. Where we got two super cops.
Here's an interesting question: who, in your estimation, at this time would have played a better, nerdier Stanley Goodspeed than Nick Cage? This is off the cuff, ladies and gentlemen. I'm putting him on the spot. We haven't talked about this.
He might have been a little old, Jeff Goldblum.
Ooh. I think he would have been right about right
is
in the sweet spot.
Is he about the same
spot,
age, you think?
Right
is,
in the sweet
I mean, it
spot.
Was been a few years after Jurassic Park.
I think right in the sweet spot.
He could have done it.
I think so.
My man could have done it.
I don't want him to do it. I think
Nick Cage nailed
Nick,
it.
Yeah, Nick Cage crushed it.
The thing about Goldblum is he's like 6'3".
Yeah.
Would he be towering over everyone else? And it'd be weird. The tall nerd that we're all looking up to.
Hello, sir.
I don't know, but he has the same similar kind of kinetic energy.
You realize
energy
that
about
there
him?
Are rockets in Alcatraz, don't you?
Just give us a little bit of Dr. Ian Malcolm. I don't know who else. There are others, surely, but I don't know that anyone could have done
people,
better.
Paxton?
Paxton. He should have been one of the Marine goons.
Or he should have played Paxton.
Paxton, yes. He would have been a good Paxton.
He would have been a great Paxton.
Yeah.
Anyway, we cut to San Francisco. We see sentries guarding the perimeter of Alcatraz. Hostages are looking forlorn in their prison cells.
Yeah.
We see the FBI. They've set up a mobile command center on the waterfront at Pier 39.
What is this building?
I think it's just a warehouse.
It's huge, and it sounds like car. It seems like it's got like loading docks and cargo bays, but then there's also a bunch of half-built cars inside of it.
Yeah, I think that it's just supposed to be like a big warehouse.
Whatever it was, it was, you know, incredible. But you, like, for those of you who aren't aware, real estate in San Francisco is
a
fucking premium.
Well, if you're the United States government, though.
You wouldn't have this huge fucking building that's just empty.
The United States government does.
Do you think the government owned that building? I thought
Absolutely.
It was just something they commandeered or something.
Well, either way.
I don't know, yeah.
They could afford it. So anyway, Womack and Goodspeed arrive at the field office, the mobile office, where they're greeted by Paxton.
Yeah.
Not Bill,
not
but played
Bill.
By William
Sadly,
Forsythe.
Sadly, not Bill.
William Forsythe, who, let me scroll up back to my notes, which I read his IMDb bio is hysterical. It starts off with...
I know Flat Top from...
Yes, from
Dick Tracy, and I don't know what else.
But his bio says, dynamic, entertaining, heavyset actor with piercing eyes.
So his agent wrote that?
I guess.
Heavyset is not like... He wasn't heavy set in this film.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, what a weird, turn of phrase. Like,
their
that's how you're describing.
Agents or publicists write their bios, I think.
Anyway, I loved that he described it as heavy set, but yeah, anyway.
He's in
Paxton.
Charge of that office, we take it, right? Like, he's the man in charge.
Yeah, he's the
special
FBI
agent
guy.
In charge.
Exactly.
Of the San Francisco office.
Yeah,
okay.
So Forsythe Paxton says that they have the prisoner.
Wait, I was dismayed by how close the cars came to hitting those pigeons when they rolled up to the building. I was like, cruelty to the animals, no! Like,
no pigeons were harmed in the filming of this movie.
And if they were harmed, fuck them.
Yeah, fuck them. They were probably sick with coronavirus. Anyway, Womack and Chief Justice were talking about the prisoner that they have in custody, but Paxton is confused because there's no record. There's no record of this guy.
That's right.
Womack explains that he's John Mason, a British agent, and then he was imprisoned on Alcatraz in 1962 and broke out the next year.
Correct.
So, I love this. Paxton chimes in, I was under the impression that no one ever escaped, to which Womack claps down, Paxton, don't argue. Like, Womack's character has been building in dickishness from scene number one with him. He's like, damn, he's a hard ass. He's sort of an asshole.
He's a heel, right? I guess he's meant to be a heel character.
When I first meet him, though, I don't necessarily think that. But as the scenes go on, it's like he gets worse and worse. Like, I think less of him.
Yeah, he doesn't have a whole lot of integrity, as we'll see.
Yeah, so he says that the prisoner, in the eyes of U.S. and British government, does not exist.
Right. It was like that thing of...
He's a phantom.
We captured him. The Brits said, we don't know who this is. And they're like, oh, well, I guess we'll just hold him indefinitely.
So Womack sends Paxton in to make a deal with Mason. And the deal is that he'll get a pardon if he can show them a path through the bowels of Alcatraz. Paxton says, why don't you do this if you already know each other? To which then Womack's like, that's not a great idea.
It seems to be a sore subject.
It's weird, right?
Well, he's like, oh no, he remembers me. Like, I don't want it clouding the issue.
Because then for the rest of this movie, you get the feeling that Womack would love to fucking kill Mason himself.
Oh, you got that impression?
Like, big time.
Like he wanted to end his life?
Yes. Without giving too much away, I'll give a lot away. Like, he wants to see a dead body at the end of the movie.
He just wants to make sure Mason's never a free man again, whether he's dead or, I guess, in jail.
It makes me wonder, it's like, is Womack such a, like, a dyed-in-the-wool, like, hardcore, quote-unquote, patriot?
Maybe cut from that, like,
that
J. Edgar Hoover cloth. Yeah,
maybe
I don't
so.
Know.
We get the idea that there's some bad blood there, but then Paxton and Mason as soon as Paxton's in the room, they're immediately, it's Mason's fault. They're adversarial from the get-go.
Right.
Paxton, even though...
But Paxton's a hard ass.
Paxton was warned before he entered the room, don't try to play hardball with him.
Yeah.
Like, don't go hard. anyway, Paxton says, I don't know about your past, but you're here because there's a problem and we think that you can help us with it.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. And then this is excellent. I love this kind of writing where Mason immediately starts going into, like, trying to feel his opponent out by maybe referencing things that his opponent's not.
We've seen that, that Mason's very well read. Like, he's been doing a lot of reading in his time.
Shang-Chu,
like...
Shakespeare. So he starts referencing Mandela, Al-Khamenei, Sir Walter Raleigh, Alexander
Solzhenitsyn.
Yeah. Goodspeed.
Who, like, I love Paxton when he's like, he says that he breaks up the Solson. He says, didn't he play for the fucking Red Wings?
For the fucking Red Wings. A good chap. Connery replies. But Goodspeed in the other room is like picking up on all of that. He's like, okay.
He's a nerd. I mean, he's like read the same books or whatever. He's probably an Ivy League dude.
If he's a Jack Ryan, like, or any other kind of like special agent that wants to like run in their guns blazing, he's maybe ostensibly not going to be in the same mind frame. Anyway, Paxton cuts to the chase and tells Mason, there's a hostage situation on Alcatraz. Mason confused. The Rock has become a tourist attraction.
It was like a mixture of like confusion, and he's amused by this, or he doesn't like.
Here's what I wonder: even if you're in high, like locked down security, are you? Is like current events, are they being withheld from you? Do you not have access to any periodicals whatsoever?
I'm curious. He obviously has a great library that
he
reads.
Yeah, they're giving him books.
Like, does he not? But he might not be removed from like pop culture or, you know, the internet.
But it's interesting that, like, whether he's playing it for a fool or if he's being legitimate.
On the other hand, I could see how if you did hard time there, you're like, people come see this place for fun?
Yeah,
like,
big time.
Fucking what?
It's effective to you and me. It's effective to the audience at home. But I wondered as a viewer, I was like, I wonder if he's up on that.
Completely severed. Depending on how much they have him locked down, it could be that he has no access to
anything. I kind of believe that is the case, at least for the purposes of this movie. So anyway, Paxton says if he'll help them, if Mason will help them, he'll get out of prison while he's still upright. While he's still got a little lead in the pencil, huh?
That's a sexual thing, right?
Right. Okay. Boner. While you can still get it up, sir. Mason says, while he's considering the deal, he'll take a suite at the Fairmont Hotel. Paxton, which he was told not to play strong arm with Mason, he tosses a quarter at him. He can't help himself.
Yeah,
he's like, he tosses a quarter, which wouldn't work now because payphones don't exist, and tells him to call his lawyer. It's an unnecessary escalation of the situation, right?
That gag, it shouldn't work, but I bought it, like, in the moment.
Yeah.
The, like, extreme close-up with the quarter spinning on the tabletop and then falling on the floor, I'm like, I don't know how that was accomplished, like, whether it was a real quarter or whether it was, like, an oversized
coin. It reminded me of my favorite shot in Lord of the Rings with the oversized ring on the chain and like, heading up to Caradhras.
I'm like, it looks amazing. It's just
it looks
this
awesome.
Classic Michael Bay, like, sort of abstract-ish shot.
Yeah.
And it just, like, is like... that's a fucking cool thing to look at, which I think is half of what he's going for.
I love it. Anyway, Paxton.
Oh, when I was watching with my friend who had never seen the movie before,
yeah,
she was like, "Don't leave that quarter!" Like, even before anything happened.
Smart.
Yeah,
that's
it
smart.
Was like, so it's clever.
Super smart. So Paxton goes back in the waiting area. He's content to let Mason stew for a while, but Goodspeed rightfully points out that time is short. Womack agrees. So Womack tells Goodspeed to go and talk to Mason. And it's like,
I love that exchange.
What? Yeah.
He's like, well, don't tell him you're...
He tells Stanley not to mention that he's like, don't even mention that you're a chemical weapons
expert. He's like, I'm a chemical guy. I don't talk to prisoners.
You're going
like,
well, to
don't
lie?
Don't mention that.
Yeah, lie.
Yeah, lie. I love it. It's just like instant. Yeah, no, lie. That's exactly what I want you to do.
He's awesome. Leo is awesome.
He's amazing. John Spencer.
John Spencer, we love you.
Rest in peace as well.
Yes. Upon entering the room, Goodspeed is fucking super awkward.
He really
well,
is.
I'm Stanley Goodspeed.
I'm Stanley Goodspeed.
But of course you are, which is apparently a line that he from another Bond movie.
I think
from
he
Bond
is
movie.
Diamonds Are Forever. I think Plenty O'Toole.
But yes, Plenty O'Toole. Woman. Yes.
Plenty O'Toole, but of course you are.
But of course you are. Cage is so good at playing the goof.
Yes.
So good in this movie.
They had the whole bit with the coffee.
Yeah. Can we get a cup of coffee in here, please?
Mason is like, coffee?
Coffee.
And he's like, no, I'm good. He's like, me coffee. That's the main bit of this movie. Feels like Aaron Sorkin writing to me, that scene.
All the stuff.
The bit when he walks in, that whole scene, I was like, okay, if they hired Sorkin, this feels like a scene that was written.
I love all of Nick Cage's like waving of the hand, trying to appear sort of macho in front of this guy, like playing this part.
Put
a cup of coffee in here, please. Mason also asked to have his handcuffs taken off, which Goodspeed complies with. We love the little guy. Well, that's one way to like the
that
guy.
Was, the little dude Willie Garson from like Sex and the City, but he's just a comedy actor.
Yeah.
He's just, I'm sure he was uncredited in this. He's just a background player. He's probably like, what if I said something funny here?
And he did.
Go
he nailed it. Yeah, so Goodspeed shoves the pardon across, says, you know, do what we're asked. We'll give you pardon. Mason goes to sign it, muttering something in Latin. Goodspeed immediately knows what he's saying. It translates it to, I fear the Greeks even when they bring gifts. Mason,
I like this. I like that Mason's, like, impressed.
That's what I feel like, though. It's like everything that Mason says from the time Paxton walked in has been trying to feel out the situation. And he hasn't gotten the information until Goodspeed walks in, and he's already like, you're not a field agent.
Well, they're on a closer wavelength. Like, they're elevated, like, you know, philosophically
Philosophically, but you feel like that Mason is the best of both worlds. He's philosophical
he's got the goods, and he's whoever else.
They have a little back and forth. Goodspeed lies about his expertise, says he's anti-terrorism. So you're into explosives, weaponry, close combat.
Well-trained.
Yeah, well-trained, sir. Mason agrees to the deal and says that he'll take the room at the Fairmont with a little pampering. I want a suite, a shower, a shave, the feel of a suit.
Did you tour around San Francisco much when you were there?
I drove around, the downtown area.
Did you go check out Fairmont or anything?
I did not.
That?
At this time, it would have been totally lost on my radar, especially because the only time that I really went downtown from where the Opera House was on Van Ness across the street from the courthouse was when my parents were in town. But it was really, really close to the Fairmont.
Fairmont's fucking amazing. It's like the neighborhood is called Knob Hill.
Yeah.
And it was like where all the millionaires used to live. The
Sweet
common
name.
Folks called them knobs. I think that's where it comes
Badass.
From. It's like all the knobs over on Knob Hill.
Badass.
I didn't stay at the Fairmont when I was there. I stayed at the hotel across the street, the like Mark Hopkins.
Dude, that's cool.
But I did all my drinking at the Fairmont.
That's badass,
like,
man.
The
that's
Fairmont's
very cool.
Fucking amazing. They have all this like tiki bar down in the basement or whatever as well.
For those of you who are listening now, COVID's still a thing. When this is over, Kevin and I are going to the Fairmont. You can find us there. We'll let you know.
And the top of the Mark Hopkins top floor has this like amazing view because it's Knob Hill's about the highest thing in the city.
Right.
And there's like this martini bar up on the like the rooftop sort of bar. It's amazing. So yes, we'll go check that
Badass.
Out. First round's on me.
Yeah. All the rest of the rounds will be on me for alerting me to this bar. After we get Mason talking about his suite, we get Goodspeed saying he's suggesting a haircut. He's like, your look's sort of out of style. It's a grunge thing. Sort of badass. I like that.
Yeah.
After Goodspeed's walked out, Mason uses his chair leg. We see him smash the edge of the quarter that Paxton threw.
Would that work? Like, could you smash a coin?
I feel like
just a chair leg?
I feel like if you smashed it and there's one other guard in there, they wouldn't be like, what are you doing? They would be. I don't know. But yeah, I feel like the chair would have, there wouldn't need to be like one of those felt pads on the bottom or something.
Yeah, sure.
You could do it that way. So Goodspeed walks back into behind the two-way glass. Womack immediately takes the pardon agreement and tears it up. After making
Asshole.
Fun of Goodspeed. Yeah.
Asshole.
So, like, more and more Womack seeming like a dickhead.
Goodspeed's pissed.
Yeah, he's like, I gave that man my word. And he But Womack says, you're on a need-to-know basis after Stanley's like, what are we even holding this man? He's like, you don't need to know. You're on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know.
Which is irrelevant, because that line pays off a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Womack is starting more and more to seem like a fucking bastard.
Right. Goodspeed, the smart guy.
Yeah, yeah. He says that all the historical figures that Mason mentioned were people that were wrongfully imprisoned.
Yeah, I looked them all up, and the facts were correct.
Right. And then while this is happening, I love this whole bit is happening, and you see Mason sort of inching towards the glass, leaning towards the glass, and then all of a sudden, like, doing the ring around the glass with, we guess, the quarter.
Would that work? Does that weaken the glass or make it easier to break it anyway?
I feel like, yes. In 96,
really,
it would
have.
You don't
have. Question it that much when you're watching. He's like, he must know what he's doing. I don't know.
I mean, because you guess it's bulletproof. Maybe. Yeah. Or maybe it's not bulletproof.
You can put an elbow through it, I think.
Yeah.
But I think it's just maybe to make it break in like a cleaner ring. I have no clue.
I trust that John Mason knows what he's doing.
Someone did the research on
this. Exactly.
It's not us.
Exactly. So he busts a hole in. He sees Womack. Womack, why am I not surprised, you piece of shit?
Do you think he would... Would it be easy to recognize a dude? Is this the first time he's seen him in 30 years?
Yeah.
And you think he's just like...
After a decade, I saw you and you look exactly the same.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Exactly the same. You're still just as handsome.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Anyway, guards burst in. We love this. Subdue Mason, who throws up peace signs.
He's like, peace. He says peace.
Peace, peace. Cut to, we see Goodspeed riding with Mason in the back of a paddy wagon. Goodspeed calling Carla and says... Hey, babe, don't come to San Francisco.
Is this the first opportunity he's had to try to call her?
I think
since
so. It's been a busy afternoon. I don't know why he couldn't have called her on the plane unless that technology didn't exist.
Well, cell phone wouldn't work on the
plane. Unless they had a phone on the plane, they had to have.
They had to have something.
Anyway.
The idea of letting her to come to San Francisco obviously is not something he wants to have happen.
No, but she is not having it and hangs up on him.
I bought that, though.
That's a hothead.
Well,
you get
she's
the explanation.
She's like a fiery
Italian lady.
Italian.
I don't know. That's not cool, Carla, in my opinion. Let him explain. Anyway, Mason wants to know. He's been eavesdropping.
Who's Carla?
I've been dropping no eaves, sir. Otis. Mason wants to know why he wants her to avoid the city. You're on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know.
And Mason, like, barks in his face. It's
very funny.
That makes me laugh. Every time I watch this movie.
I love Sean Connery, like, because you never think of him as being sort of this gritty character.
And the other, like, the FBI dudes in the paddy wagon
they're
are
loving
like,
it.
Watch out, he'll bite you. It's like so fun.
It's so good.
Cage said that it was Connery's idea that he brought that he should be like kind of constantly needling Womack and needling Goodspeed.
I love that. I would not expect anything less from Connery, just to be like, he's...
Imagine a dude who's been locked up for no, like, without a trial
it's
for
Sun
30
Tzu,
years.
It's Sun Tzu mentality. You're like, you want a needle and...
Looking for weaknesses,
yeah,
probing
exactly,
for weaknesses.
Exactly, probing your opponent. So we're at the Fairmont, which I read is on Mason Avenue.
It is on the Mason Street.
Or Mason Street, okay. Goodspeed telling Womack that he needs a... I love this. Telling him he needs a weapon. One of the agents is sort of incredulous and calls Stanley a chemical freak. I'm a chemical super freak, actually.
Which Cage said that was another musical reference to let everyone
super
know,
freak.
Like, this is Rick James. I'm Rick James, bitch.
Darkness. So what?
He wanted to let, but he wanted to keep peppering through that, like, his frame of reference is through music.
Always. I love that. Love that because I have some very, very good friends who are, like, they're amateur musicians, but by profession, they do other things, but they're just, like, music nuts. So anyway, Womack tells the guy to give Stanley a gun. The guard does grudgingly.
That can't be how this works.
There has to be some paperwork filed.
Sure, here's a gun. Like, yeah, it has to be the gun and it's registered to this guy. And if shots fired,
they would know if he did that in that situation that gun is licensed to that guy.
There's no way a gun changes hands because that gun has to be linked to the dude who gave it to him.
Don't you
like?
Well, yeah.
It could never work, but, you know, it's a
fucking movie. Damn it, guys,
you
dropped the ball on this. So anyway.
He does say he left his gun in his sock drawer.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Like,
Where's your gun?
I didn't think I'd need it. We cut to Mason singing real poorly along to, Are You Going to San Francisco?
That had to have been intentionally bad,
right?
Going
to San Francisco.
I think he's torturing the guards.
He's trying to make noise.
He's just trying to
make noise. he starts examining. I love, like,
well,
this
one of the guards just
awesome.
Leafing through a porno mag. Like,
hopefully it's the same like Stone Age Jugs thing.
What was the thing, Biggins? That was Al Bundy.
Al Bundy? Yes.
Just reading the latest issue of Biggins.
Oh, God. So Mason starts examining the drying line in the bathroom, starts pulling it out. He picks up a phone then and quietly orders a bunch of room service. You do snacks? Drinks?
Of course.
It's at that point in the other room that the stylist... Are
don't
you a barber?
Him.
No.
Stylist.
I'm a stylist.
Don't
stylist.
Call him a barber.
And this was Anthony Clark as the hairdresser, who the only other credit that I know him from is Boyd on the sitcom Boss in Common. Do you remember that
I
at
remember
all?
that show existed, but I never saw an episode.
I feel like, and we talked earlier about the timeline, whether he was famous because of the sitcom or whether it was one of those situations where his star was rising and he was on the sitcom and then landed the movie.
Sometimes,
or vice versa.
That was like the era of you're a hot stand-up, so you're going to get a sitcom.
And I've never seen, I feel like he was a stand-up comic.
Probably.
But anyway, he's
what do we
playing...
make of his character, his portrayal?
It would not
Is it
float.
Offensive?
It would not float now.
He's never like exactly the butt of a joke. There's never a gay joke. There's never like a homophobic joke made.
But
at his expense,
which maybe was maybe was very good like judgment on the parts of the like producers, filmmakers, everyone else.
He is
else.
Like cartoonish though in his like effeminateness.
Yes, he is very effete. Womack tells him he can only use clippers, no scissors allowed, to which he says, did they tell Picasso no brush? It's awesome.
Right.
It's very, very funny. Mason appears and says that he'd like his hair cut out on the terrace. We get this badass view, and you
what
can
a
confirm
fucking
this.
View.
The view of San Francisco, like downtown area, is phenomenal. The stylist also does not care for Mason's prison look.
What did you make of his long hair look? He looked like decent.
I thought, I was like, if you pulled
that in
a ponytail, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Put
yeah.
it up on a top knot?
It's a grunching. Well, it's something.
It's
anyway,
some kind of a thing.
Yeah. The stylist gets to work. Under the smock, we see Mason rigging up something with the drying line from the shower.
You had no idea what it's going to be, but we know it's going to be something fucking
it's
awesome.
Some sort of weapon. Meanwhile, the room service has arrived and the agents are feasting. Back outside, the stylist is done. Sir Sean is looking great in that hairpiece.
That
is
one of the most incredible wigs I've ever seen in my life.
It is the same. I feel like it's maybe we should look.
There
we should go back and look. Is it the same hair and makeup department as was on Hunt for Red October? He looks just as good.
He is fucking incredible.
Like I would be like, yeah, that's real hair.
Oh, yeah. If you can give me a wig that looks that good, I'll wear that every day. But Connery was like, shout out to Connery. He was like loudly and proudly just a bald guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's rocking the hairpiece. The freshly coiffured Mason asks Womack what's in it for
him. Wait, where'd they get that suit for him? Did he say earlier he wanted the feel of a suit?
He said he wanted the feel of a suit.
Okay, that shit was tailored as hell, though.
It was fucked awesome, and that tie was beautiful. He asks Womack, why should I trust you? Womack says, trust me, you'll get your life back. So...
And Mason, meanwhile, he's like looking around. He's looking over the balcony. Like, it's a little foreshadowing.
Yeah, he's like definitely scoping out the area. Womack does give his word. Will you shake on it? And I love the when Womack puts his hand up, it's like, ching! It's like a knife being thrown or something. There's a musical cue, like, ding!
Okay.
And Mason grabs him. Tosses that loop of the drying line around his wrist and flings him off the balcony.
That was intense.
So cool.
Whoever that stuntman was, that was a killer stunt.
Badass. Goodspeed pulls the gun, tells him to pull him back. Freeze, mister!
Freeze, mister!
Drop the gun or I drop your boss. You will not!
He does deliver those lines with like a rhythm.
Oh,
he
big time.
Not.
Big time. Then Connery says, he's getting very heavy. All this time, Womack is like screaming. Like,
should Goodspeed have been screaming for help? Or is he worried that he's going to drop it?
I would have.
Out?
At that point, I would have, because Womack would not have been the only person in the know at that point.
True.
No way. No way. I'd have been like, yeah, fucking drop it. Fine. Anyway, Mason wraps the end of the rope around the armchair of some like patio furniture and lets it go and runs off. Goodspeed runs and grabs the chair, calls for help.
Now he's screaming for help, yeah.
Agents come running. Mason's gone. He says, Mason's gone! They're like, go, go, go! Like, everyone's screaming.
Goodspeed sort of takes off after
him. Love Mason runs in the elevator where the stylist is, and the stylist is like, all I care about is, are you happy with your haircut?
It's a pretty good line.
This fucking
dude
badass.
Is funny. I did not like the stylist's hairstyle. Like the weird little curls he had down in front. But, you
that's
know,
fine. A lot of times people that cut hair, they don't have enough time to spend on their own deal. So anyway, on the terrace, the agents pull Womack. He's like, "Watch it, you fuckhead. You're going to pull my arm out." His voice is crazy. Like the agonized pain sound.
And that had the look of, I mean, it was not him hanging from the thing, but when they're pulling him up over the railing, it looked like they probably really shot it on location with him on the other side of the railing and maybe a
probably
platform
had him harnessed
or
in or something. Yeah. So Mason goes crashing through the hotel kitchen. Goodspeed goes behind. As Stanley rounds a corner, Mason surprises him with a sucker punch, but then keeps running.
I felt like there was like the missing moment of like a big burst of flame, like from a cooktop or a
like a grease fire.
I mean, this is a Michael Bay movie. I expect there's going to be a burst of flame in the kitchen.
You're probably like the running down the escalator was enough. outside. Mason steals a guy's Humvee from the valet. We love the weird German guy.
He's a weird little pushy German dude.
This is my Humvee.
If you don't put one dent on, I'm going to kick your ass.
I don't want any dings, dents, or scratches. I'll have your ass. It's like, weird. What? Okay. Thanks. Like, I wonder, like, was he a friend? Like, I wondered, because he seemed, I don't know, like...
That was an odd moment.
The voice sounded familiar. It's sort of like Wolfgang Puckish, but it's not Wolfgang Puck. Like, was he a...
Wolfgang
I don't
Puck's
know.
A good shout, though. That was, it was like that.
Yeah. So there's suddenly a fleet, you're not wrong, of government vehicles going off in hot pursuit.
They were already, like, in the cars, engines running.
Ready to go. And this is where we get, like, one of those bullet-style... car chases through San Francisco.
Michael Bay's version.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a fucking Hummer and,
oh my God.
And a yellow Ferrari.
It is adrenaline-fueled bullet chase through the streets of San Francisco. It's not gritty.
Bullet's car was badass, but...
It was awesome. Yeah, Goodspeed commandeers the Ferrari. Mason's crashing through the streets. Awesome flying car stunts. Mason crashes through a construction site, crashes through a truck hauling Yosemite water bottles. Goodspeed's like trying to catch up in the chase.
He got the Ferrari. He's like making good time.
Yeah. But all the way law enforcement vehicles are like catching flak, like blowing up, like getting knocked off. Mason knocks a car into a telephone pole. There's a fire crash. The pole falls down across the street behind Mason, blocks the road.
Not without like cars flipping through the air.
It's
and, like corkscrewing.
Unbelievable. And... like everything that's happening as a
amazing.
Result. Goodspeed. On a dime. He's not from San Francisco.
No, but he recognizes the road's closed. And okay. I'm going to cut down a block.
Takes a detour around the pileup through a building. Why not?
Oh, well, why not?
Yeah.
Like, another line delivered with that rhythm that he referenced.
I got this point. For someone who hasn't operated a motor vehicle in 30 years, or any vehicle for that matter.
He's good.
Mason's rocking the shit.
He is.
Does that Her Majesty's Secret Service training kick in immediately?
A Hummer's got to be so unlike anything you ever
it's
could
like
have driven before.
With power steering and everything else?
I mean, I literally, though, I thought the same about the Ferrari. Like, from what I understand, a Ferrari is really hard to drive because it's so powerful.
Yeah. Powerful,
like,
and the steering
if
turns
if you hit the gas
the
too fast, the wheels are just going to spin out. You'll donut out or fishtail or something.
3 weeks of weapons and vehicle training is not going to get that done.
He's good at this Ferrari, yeah.
Anyway... it's at that point that the Humvee owner calls Mason on the vehicle's car phone. I'm only borrowing your Humvee.
Was that the line that pissed you off?
Yeah, just growing up, it just didn't sound genuine to me from Connery.
What about earlier when the cars were flipping
your Humvee?
In the air and he's like, I hope you're insured.
Yeah, that's even worse.
That one didn't. Okay.
Going back now, watching it the last couple of days, the Humvee line bothers me less now.
That's the Michael Bay magic.
You
gotta
change your mind, baby. Change your mind. Anyway, Mason uses the car phone then to call information looking for a Jade Angelou.
Angelou.
We see an elderly lady step out in front of Mason who swerves into the side of a cable car.
I'm virtually certain that was a man.
It was
person.
A much younger stunt lady dressed up in
old
person
stunt,
makeup.
They were like, they looked like an actor trying to walk like an old person.
Yeah,
very shaky
with the arm way up, looked like the Wicked Witch. Anyway, the Humvee knocks the rear end of the trolley off its track.
Mm-hmm.
The cable car goes sideways. Riders are just falling off into the street.
Yes, it's pretty good stunts.
I love it. Like, Goodspeed somehow is able, like, I would have run over every civilian in the room.
You would have hit them all.
Like, run over. It's miraculous that he didn't hit a single one. The trolley starts hitting cars. The driver says, "We're going to crash. Save yourself."
I love that driver. Just makes me laugh, man. I love him.
It's so
good.
Did
you ride cable cars when you were in San Francisco?
I did not.
Like, on some level, it is sort of public transit, but it's also a tourist thing.
Yeah.
So the drivers are kind of entertaining as they go.
Yeah.
And they have, like, a tip jar and stuff, and they're giving you, like, a history tour as you're riding. I'd be that geek, though, who's, like, riding cable cars just to get around, because that was, like, one of my favorite things, was, like, riding the cable cars. It's so fun.
Yeah. So then we see Goodspeed swerving to avoid a group of...
wheelchair.
Why?
I swear to God, there were wheelchair basketball players and bad boys also. Like,
okay.
Like that. I felt like
it's
just
him,
Michael
like, giving
Bay
a
touch.
Shout out?
I don't know if he knows someone who's in a wheelchair or something like this, but
that's kind
of
cool.
It's cool because it's not the normal. It's not the homeless lady pushing a cart of cans.
Exactly.
In every other movie.
Oh my God. We see the Ferrari jumps the curb, mows down a row of parking meters, cracking the windshield.
It smashes the shit out of that
windshield. That car is fucked. Anyway, Goodspeed spins to a stop at the bottom of the hill. The airbags deploy.
The windshield is intact.
Oh, my God. We don't even ask. The cable car is careening down the hill, smashes into an SUV. There's a huge explosion. Throws the trolley car. That stunt's awesome. Where
that
throws it up in the air.
Incredible. They did that for real.
That's badass.
I think they added CGI flames, like more flames than was there. They jacked the thing up in the air and dropped it.
I don't even know how.
Incredible.
It looks amazing. It crashes down, rolls over on its side, slides down the steep incline towards the Ferrari. Goodspeed frees himself from the car just
before
the
trolley. I feel like he shot the airbag to deflate it and bailed.
Yeah, like... I mean, and then we get the, like, Goodspeed, like, stands up in that Michael Bay low pan around.
You gotta have the trademark Michael Bay shot. It's, like, sort of low angle looking up at him. Yeah.
Well, it's panning around.
It's rotating around him
it's
as
so good.
The music swells.
I love the dude on the dirt bike. "Hey, man, you just fucked up your Ferrari."
Back in high school, we used to laugh, like, "You just fucked up your Ferrari."
"It's not mine." And the dude starts laughing.
He shoves him off that dirt bike.
Yeah, dude laughs. Stanley pushes him down and seals his bike. And friends, that's enough.
That's a lot. But wait, the trolley driver. I gotta pay respect to the trolley driver because he
dude
fucking
is kills awesome.
Me. You can hear him in the background. He's like saying, "My baby's going down in flames." But then they cut back to him and he's like, "Damn it, this sucks."
It's
I love that.
So good.
"Where's that son of a bitch at? I'm going to hunt him down. That motherfucker ain't safe nowhere."
Do you think that they just told him just improv
ad-lib,
guy?
Just ad lib.
I wonder if
lot.
He was an actor or whether he was like an actual city of San Francisco trolley driver.
I feel like that dude was such a comedian. I feel like he was probably a comedian, but I have no clue. It's like a cheesy and a cheap joke, but man, it makes me smile.
He destroys
it.
It
makes me chuckle. I can't help it.
Every time.
"Damn it. This sucks. What else can you say? Like, that's your way of making a living.
Yep.
It's smashed and burning.
I love it. I love it.
This sucks. This episode, though, this movie does not suck.
Neither did this episode, we think. You should go back and listen to it again.
Smash that subscribe button.
We don't have a subscribe button, but go back and listen to it anyway. We hope you guys are enjoying week 2 of our breakdown of The Rock, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, we'll be back.